But I just wanted to get started on the floating offshore wind and have Jack Shapiro come up. I understand there's been a lot of discussions between the groups that were involved in the drafting of the bill and the governor's energy office on changes to the bill. And do we have something to be passed out, Jack? Okay. And have we done our analysis on this yet? So I'm going to ask you to sit down again, Jack, and suggest we do the analysis first, get that out of the way. If we don't have time to finish that up, don't have time to come back to you for lunch, then it'll be the first thing after we come back at one.
So Jake is handing out the most recent amendment. I did want to sort of ask the committee, I've got bill analysis prepared. This is with respect to the sponsors. The summary portion is with respect to the amendment from May 15th. This changes things. So I don't know if you want me to go through. I mean, if
I would say go through the analysis as briefly as possible.
Can do.
That's well enough that I can follow.
Okay. Well,
not that slow.
Wow. Ooh. All right, so Jake is handing out the bill analysis. So this is an act regarding the procurement of energy from offshore wind resources. So at the public hearing, the sponsor indicated that the bill is printed, actually did not include a lot of the language, which was intended to be in there. So I focused on, there we go. Okay. I focused on the sponsor's amendment from May 15th, which replaces the bill. So the amendment enacts new definitions in the Maine Wind Energy Act. It creates the Maine Offshore Wind Renewable Energy and Economic Development Program. It directs the PUC in coordination with the GEO and other state agencies to conduct a series of competitive solicitations in order to select floating extraterritorial wind projects for contracts with transmission and distribution utilities. It has some specific requirements with respect to the competitive solicitations. Each solicitation must seek proposals for not less than 600 megawatts of aggregate nameplate capacity of floating extraterritorial wind projects. And it sets goals for the PUC. They must ensure that solicitations result in the approval of contracts in specific amounts by 2030 and 2032. The amendment required a weighting of benefits to ratepayers at 60%, benefits to the state economy and communities at 25%, and benefits for natural resources at 15%. It listed many requirements that a bid proposal must include, multiple types of plans that were actually described in the amendment itself. And the PUC was required to adopt rules to monitor and measure and ensure ongoing compliance with those plans. The bill, or the amendment rather, also authorized the PUC to enter into contracts for transmission service to serve offshore wind power projects through competitive solicitations. PUC had to coordinate with Governor's Energy Office, T&D Utilities, other states, ISO New England, and those also were subject to various plan requirements, and the PUC, in reviewing those proposals, must consider the amount of various factors that are listed there. The amendment also provided that an application for a submerged lands lease or easement in connection with an offshore wind power project selected for a contract must be charged an annual operating fee. It requires the applicant to demonstrate that it's fully executed or will execute a labor peace agreement with a bona fide labor organization that actively represents or seeks to represent employees working for and providing services in connection with the power project. Leasing operating fees will go to a newly created Fishing Communities Protection and Low-Income Ratepayer Fund within the Office of the State Treasurer. Those funds, 80%, must be used to fund grants to developers, manufacturers of component parts, and operators of floating offshore wind facilities that are located outside of Lobster Management Area 1, which is defined by the Department of Marine Resources, and have fully executed labor peace agreements or commit to executing one. They also, and 20% of that fund must go to LIAP. The amendment also creates, it provides that when the Shore and Harbor Management Fund expends money for the purposes of constructing improvements in connection with an offshore wind power project, The grant of any such funds must be conditioned upon the recipient's agreement to conform with requirements applicable to assisted projects under Title 26, Chapter 15. It also amends that chapter to clarify that such projects are considered assisted projects for the purposes of that chapter. The amendment specifies the Offshore Wind Research Consortium is an initiative of the GEO in collaboration with Department of Marine Resources and Inland Fisheries and Wildlife, and specifies duty for the consortium, and it adds members to the board. It also creates the Fishing Community Protection Tax Incentive Program, which allows an applicant that has received a certificate of completion to receive a credit against sales, income, use, or other state tax due at an amount equal to 2% of the certified applicant's qualified investment, not exceed $15 million annually for 20 years. And there's a few bullet points with respect to that. Committee had a public hearing on the 18th and received testimony. I've kind of highlighted some of the technical issues and suggestions raised in testimony. PUC noted regional partnerships and joint procurements may be limited due to the time frame of the procurements that was specified in the amendment and the very specific requirements. And they were concerned the procurement does not provide the flexibility that they need to ensure that ratepayer exposure is limited. PUC noted the mechanics of selection process with the of the proposals with the GEO is unclear given the nature of commissioner deliberations. Governor's Energy Office noted the proposed procurement requirements are overly prescriptive and additional flexibility should be included in developing the solicitation. They also noted they've shared input from Inland Fisheries and Wildlife, stating that extending the scope of their responsibility would require additional staff resources. They also included input from Department of Marine Resources, suggesting using the term marine resources in addition to fisheries in various sections to make it clear that it is both the activity and the resources. There are specific comments on various sections of the bill. Section 2, this relates to the leases or an easement and the demonstration that it has fully executed or will execute a labor peace agreement is defined in statute with a bona fide labor organization that actively represents or seeks to represent employees working for the project. I'm not sure, does one organization represent all employees? Is one agreement enough if it doesn't cover all of the employees to meet that requirement? Section 7 of the bill, it was unclear how the PUC and GEO, one of their charges was to develop transmission infrastructure. Wasn't clear on how they would do that. Section 8 of the amendment, it provided for a solicitation of portions of projects was allowable. The committee may wish to clarify what's intended by that language. And I don't believe that's included in the most recent amendment. The GEO and other agencies must develop selection criteria and make them available for public comment at least 60 days. May wish to clarify if that should be prior to the solicitation. And also in Section 8 provides that the commission shall establish a process by rule for disclosure of quarterly reports filed by a responsible entity, including appropriate redaction to protect individual privacy or proprietary business information. I wanted to flag this for the committee. Additional language may be necessary here to create an exception to FOA. And if so, this may require a FOA review with the Judiciary Committee. So that's a process that anytime you're creating an exception to the Freedom of Access Act, it has to go through them. Section 12 establishes the tax incentive program. It didn't specify whether the tax credits are refundable. That has been addressed, I believe, in the amendment. Looks like the intent was to make them refundable, but I believe they are not refundable. This section appears to be modeled on programs that are in existing law. I'm not an expert in the tax code by any means, but I saw some very similar language. Those credit programs establish a minimum amount for qualified investments. That may be something the committee wants to look at. Preliminary fiscal impact statement has not been received from OFPR, and there were several information requests. This was the bill in which Senator Harrington had requested documentation supporting the inclusion of the tribes and the GEO's wind energy initiatives. Representative Paul asked whether the PUC had considered decommissioning in this process, and Representative Runte had asked what percentage of costs for floating wind projects are attributable to labor, and that was a blue float.
Great. Are there questions for Lindsay on her analysis first off? Representative Warren?
I was just kind of curious that the FOIA piece, is that is that law? I mean, it was just interesting to me and absolutely fine either way, but I was just curious.
Just to correct, that's not FOIA, that's FOA, correct? The state law?
FOA, yes. So that is something, the requirement that a new exception to FOA be examined by the Judiciary Committee. I believe that's in statute. I thought I printed it out, but I'm not actually seeing it, but I will grab that on lunch and bring it back for you.
Other questions on Lindsay's analysis? Representative Foster.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Lindsay, I, under the information request, I thought I had, and I believe it was this bill, asked for the PUC to give us an update on the Monhegan Island wind facility and also on the situation with the research array. But I may.
I believe that was actually on a different bill.
Yeah, that may be on the other bill. So I think we answered that question. And we also answered Senator Harrington's question on the other bill regarding the tribe. So I think we did it all at once on that bill. I think it was on the bill to prohibit. And we went through that, but we can go through it again if you need to.
Sure.
Okay. Okay. Any other questions for Lindsay? Lindsay?
I had printed it out. So I just wanted to confirm for you that, yes, the a proposed public records exception would have to go before the Judiciary Committee, and that's in law. So
any other questions for Lindsay on her analysis? So before we get into the informational requests, I wasn't able to comment during the public hearing because I was a sponsor. But I know Representative Dunphy did ask the question of how this bill was addressed. Drafted, and I think NRCM said they drafted it. That's really not accurate. I mean, he technically was the scrivener of all this. The genesis of this bill originally came from an idea that was proposed to me by Habib Dagher 3 or 4 years ago. And he said, we need to get out in front on a procurement if we're going to make his project viable or floating offshore wind and viable in Maine. So that gave me the idea to start. And then several groups became interested into it as well. NRCM was one of them. They were essentially environmental groups, labor groups. The fishery groups were obviously interested in the impact on them. And then there were groups that were kind of interested in, you know, who gets trained for these types of jobs? Are we reaching out to all different types of sources? So to solve that issue, we had a committee set up. So if you ever try to do anything by a committee, it's kind of an animal with four hind legs. So there's you know, some kind of a lot of pushing and no little direction. So I served as kind of the director, directing where I wanted it to go. Unfortunately, Jack drew the short straw. So I asked him to draft the whole thing. So that's why he said he drafted it, but it was not NRCM's idea. This idea really came from me and was the process of a committee coming in and elaborating in the process. During the process of the drafting of this, they asked if I wanted the governor briefed or the GEO briefed. So we did do a brief to them, but I intentionally made it clear that we weren't going to, at this point, talk to the kind of involve them in the discussion. That we were going to come out with what I wanted in the bill, which is what we did. And then we would go to the governor and the GEO and see what they wanted in the bill. So the bill is really, I'm the one who drafted the bill, but it was Jack who wrote down all the ideas and made them sound intelligent. And then we have been in the process now of taking it to the governor's office and the GEO and getting their input on the bill. And that's what Jack is going to present, simply because I did not sit in on a lot of those discussions. He sat in and wrote up kind of the changes that they had requested between the GEO. And we have Jack here, a spokesman for our committee, and then Larissa from GEO here to talk about that. So Representative Foster.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just as one minor correction, as the chair pro tem at the time, as I recall, actually, Representative Dunphy asked the question of Ms. Kelly Flagg from AGC, and that was her answer.
Okay, good. That's a great clarification. Thank you. But I couldn't say at the time that it was actually my bill from the start, and I'm the one who kind of oversaw how it was drafted. So we want to get some answers to questions. We have that question that I think Senator Harrington, were you here at the prior answer to that?
No.
Okay, so you're all set. Representative Paul asked the PUC, had they considered the decommissioning process? So you guys are hiding behind the post. So who wants to talk about whether or not the PUC has considered the process of decommissioning these floating offshore wind turbines?
Hello, Deirdre Schneider, Maine PUC. So after that hearing, the governor's energy office reached out to us, and they actually have information because they've been dealing with this directly. There's federal requirements. So if you wanted them to provide more information, I think one of them is ready to do so.
So, Representative Foster? Yes, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Deirdre. Maybe it's my concussion, but I don't recall the answer that you gave for the Monhegan and the research array question that I asked of another bill, apparently. Yeah. Could you just refresh my memory?
Sure. So the research array, we're still in contract negotiations with that piece. We've gotten a new submission from them about a week or so ago. And so we're reviewing that information and seeing what the next steps are in that conversation. So that's still not settled. And we're still working on those things. The Monhegan, there is nothing going on because I don't think it's been in operation.
Is it even been built?
He didn't hear me. So there's no like actual wind being generated that we're paying for at this time. Monhegan.
And correct me if I'm wrong, perhaps the chair can correct me. I think the Monhegan project, I think they're with the research array, it's the same developer, and they're wondering whether it's really in their benefit to do both projects at the same time or at once, or if they maybe should just go ahead with the research array. And I think Chairman Bartlett can answer. I know I've had private discussions with him about this, but I just don't know the time frame. And something sticks in my mind that they thought the contract might be reached by the end of the year, but I don't want to commit the chairman to that.
On the offshore wind array, Phil Bartlett, PUC. We don't know the timing. I mean, I think our hope is that this will move forward. I certainly not before the last quarter of this year. I think there's just a lot of information that needs to be exchanged and a lot of work that needs to be done to get there. In part, a certain amount of it will be in the hands of the developers and what they can bring forward for information and the time that they may need to deal with our requests.
Representative Foster.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Chair Bartlett. So the Monhegan unit, that was going to be like early on, give us some idea and so on, even before the research array. Can you speak to why that never happened?
My understanding is that, they're speaking from memory, which is always very dangerous for me. I think part of it is the technology has been evolving. They're changing the design and kind of what they intend to do there. So I think that has been a significant part of the delays. I would defer to them to answer with more specificity. But I think my sense was that what they originally proposed as the technology's developed, they changed their aspirations with that turbine.
And I'm not going to speak for Representative Foster, but I would say that if we don't have a contract by the end of the year, I'm hoping you can come back after the first of the year, explain why, explain what is going on and what the time frame for this project is.
Yes, I hope we'll have a lot more information soon and certainly over the summer.
Okay. And if you want an answer to the Monhegan question, I think we have a representative of the developer here that might be able to come up and kind of give us an idea of the Monhegan project. Tony, if you want to come up. And I hate to put you on the spot, but
you love it.
I love
you. You love it. Senator Lawrence, members of the committee, I'm Tony Buxton from Pretty Flaherty, here representing everyone but the Monhegan project.
Oh, okay.
No. I was trying to be funny, but I failed. It's warm in here. By the way, I just want to comment. I think the PUC has pole attachment syndrome. That's Anyway, glad somebody got it. Okay. My understanding of the Monhegan project is that it continues to be analyzed by New England Aquaventus, which is the name of the client doing that, and by the University of Maine and by the Department, U.S. Department of Energy. The challenges are real, and they are of importance to the commission, obviously, and to this committee. The challenge is, of course, that you're building one of anything. And if you built the first Ford F-150, it would cost a lot. And so would Monhegan. And there has been a truly stunning amount of work done all around the world on how to get the cost down of building the platform in particular. At the same time, however, as you may be aware, we are in an era of significant cost increase in the supply chain for lots of things, particularly for offshore wind. And so the costs have gone up for different components like the turbines. So all that's being evaluated in the context of, and I'll get to my point, in the context of everything else that's happening in the industry. This legislation that you have worked so hard on, Senator, does that as well. What I will say to you, based on 15 years of experience working with the university and others, is that the Monhegan project's trajectory reflects the need for a port in Maine, a place to build the platform. If we don't have a port, the benefits of offshore wind largely will bypass Maine. And the benefits obviously are economic, in addition to the climate benefits that we get from it being built. And whatever happens with Monhegan, I believe, will be determined by whether we can find a way to build one of something without a port to build it at. Sorry to go on so long, but you asked.
Okay. Okay. We're a little bit after 12, so I'm going to ask us to wind up with the questions for Mr. Buxton, and then we'll break for lunch. I saw Representative Dunphy first, and then Representative Foster second.
Can you tell me how long the Monhegan Aquaventus project has been operational in terms of data gathering?
I'd have to get back to you, but I know, for example, that the bid that was filed by the University of Maine and partners was in 2013 at the commission, obviously 10 years ago. And there have been a lot of events in between, including a lack of support by some public officials that held things up. The Department of Energy remains quite interested in the technology. Despite the development of the industry across the world, it remains the platform technology created by Habib Daggar and the University of Maine remains one of four or five truly viable technologies for building these big projects.
Sam Dunphy?
Thank you. So in 10 years, there must be some data that's being collected. Is it possible to get any of that information? Or is it proprietary? Or
I'm sure some of it's proprietary, but there's been a vast amount of information. I'm happy to talk with you about it. I mean, for example, last summer, New England Aquaventus did, and you all probably know the words for it, but the soundings for where you would locate the cable for 20 miles worth of cable from Monhegan. And that information, you know, has been collected. So there's lots more than that.
Last
yes, Representative Dunphy.
So could we get that information and maybe get some of it to our lobstermen?
I think they have the same access that any member of the public has. I'll check.
Okay, thank you.
But I want to assure you, Representative Dunphy, they were there.
Stop. Okay. Yeah. So, remember, we can ask for some of this outside of the work session, Representative Foster.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Buxton, so was the mini unit that was off from Dice's Head, managed by, I think, Maine Maritime, was that part of the Aquaventus project as well, or was that?
That was not. That was the University of Maine and Department of Energy.
And what happened with that? Where is that unit now?
I frankly don't know. I'll be glad to ask.
Any other questions for Ms. Buxton? Seeing none, thank you very much. Okay, let's take our break and we'll be back at 1:10.